the Bring a Trailer podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bring a Trailer podcast. This is Alex. Happy to be with you again. And today I'm joined by Tyler Greenblatt, one of our production managers. Tyler, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Alex. We don't unfortunately get enough opportunities to hang out, so it's great to be here and talk bikes today with you, I understand.
We're going to talk bikes. Tyler's our bike guy, or one of our bike guys, I should say. We're here at the office, which was awesome. When was the last time you were here? I can't remember.
I came up here a month ago.
Soggy San Francisco?
Yes, as usual. But no, I'm about a 2-hour drive away, so love getting up here whenever I can. This particular commute allowed me to catch up on a couple podcasts. Fantastic job with Peter Egan, by the way. I've got a couple funny personal anecdotes, I suppose.
Oh, do tell. Wait, Peter Egan face-to-face?
It's the opposite of a face-to-face.
Okay.
And maybe that's what kind of makes it ironic, I suppose. I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, which is near where Peter hails from. And years ago, I was a magazine editor for a Harley-Davidson magazine. I was in the right part of the country for that kind of work.
Hell yeah, brother.
And every time I would go someplace, whether it was an automotive event, a motorcycle event, or to a friend's kid's birthday party, and I told someone what I did for a living, the first question they would ask me without fail was if I knew Peter Egan.
And this is because you're in Wisconsin, because he's like the hometown hero?
That's right. He is the hometown hero of the state of Wisconsin.
That's amazing.
So it was amazing hearing him tell some stories. I've ridden in the Wisconsin Hill Country in that western Wisconsin. I believe they call it the Driftless area. You have some Frank Lloyd Wright homes in that area.
Is that where Taliesin is?
It is
in that part? Okay.
Yep. So if you ride from Madison, Wisconsin to Taliesin and then to the Mississippi, you have had an amazing motorcycle ride.
Wow. And that's because it's like full, it's geographically kind of up and down and curves, right? That
yes.
part of the state.
Yes, exactly. Hills. And if you go east from Madison to Milwaukee, there's nothing. You've been there.
I did, but I didn't go to that part of the state.
No,
and everyone kept
you
telling
stayed
me
on
how
the
I,
wrong side of
yeah,
the state.
Yeah, everyone kept telling me that. Like I missed out on the good stuff. Although, you know, for a Californian, the Midwest is kind of novel no matter what when you're from California. But you've been in both, so you know that.
Yeah, that's right. And we have two funny jokes, I suppose. It's less funny when you're actually there about Wisconsin if you're a motorcycle rider. The first is that if you want curves, you're going to have to take an on-ramp or an off-ramp. And the second is that we have two seasons, winter and construction. And those are unfortunately very true.
Oh, man, that's a bummer. Riding is a little better out here in California, would you say?
Yes, it is. Interestingly enough, unlike Peter, I do not get to ride every day. Seems like recently I've been spending more time working on stuff than riding, unfortunately.
Working on BAT stuff or working on your bikes?
No, working on my motorcycles to get them to a point where I could ride them. I finally got my Ducati up and running. It needed a ton of work, largely because I bought some of my bikes when I was younger and maybe not so keen on how important it was to maintain your stuff.
What kind of Ducati is it?
I started off as a Harley guy to kind of explain myself a little bit. It's a wonderful bike. It's an ST2.
Which is what? This is going to be you schooling me this
I know,
time.
That's why I'm leading off with
I
this.
I know,
here.
Yeah, okay.
It's an ST2. It is a 2-valve per cylinder, 944cc. Actually, it's one of the...
A twin.
It's a twin. Yep,
and Desmodromic.
Yes.
Desmodromic, I should say.
Desmodromic valves, that's right. And it is basically Ducati decided that they wanted to enter the touring market in 1997. I believe that bike came out in Europe. I have the 98, which was the first year in the US. Beautiful silver paint, gold frame, gold wheels, a lovely Ducati combination that you don't see really anymore. And that bike, when Ducati decided that they wanted to go into the touring bike market to compete with BMW and Harley Davidson, you know, they've kind of had their task cut out for them
yeah,
on that,
no
right?
Kidding.
And all they did was take their existing superbike, basically modify the engine a little bit for torque, use like a little bit of a monster engine, a little bit of, at the time, it would have been I believe a 996 or a 998 engine, and put bags on it.
Wait, so you don't sit upright on it?
Like, no, it's a full-on sport bike with bags.
Is it all fared?
Fully fared. You have some different handlebars. So you don't have clip-on handlebars. You've got these kind of riser two-piece handlebars. And I just put heated grips on it. That was like the last thing I had to
do. Now it's a touring bike.
Yeah. Now it's a full-on touring bike. I feel like I got away from the Harley world. I have no more Harleys, even though I would love to get back into that. But it's just kind of the vibe of riding that I'm into right now is more along the lines of this bike.
Yeah.
And I'm living in a place where I still don't think I can push this bike to its limits. I still have a long way to go as a rider, I think, but at least on the ST2, I can get a little bit closer than, say, something like a 996, 998.
Compared to your CBX, which is the one that I love, as you know. Maybe we could talk about that motorcycle.
Oh, man. Dude, the CBX, I'm hoping to have it ready for kind of the prime ready season. That bike is on my lift right now, mostly in pieces. That's another bike. I bought that bike when I was 25, found it in Wisconsin. I bought that bike from a gentleman who was the John Deere dealer in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin.
That's perfect.
Isn't that amazing?
And so, it's the second. How do you break that down? It's the more fared in later CBX, right? How do you differentiate that from the early ones?
It's the 82, so it's kind of known as the white whale, the Moby Dick, if you will, for a lot of people who never are able to get one, but they're like all motorcycles. It's like, they're not super expensive at any point. So like I said, I found mine on Craigslist. I think it was like $5,000 or something. And I just happened to be scrolling Craigslist. This was, certainly before BAT auctions. Actually, no, probably right around 2014. So there would have been some BAT features, but surely stuff like this just wasn't popping up.
Sure.
You know, BAT was not kind of the new place to go look for everything.
Right.
So I was on Craigslist scrolling around and I see this 82 CBX. I see the six cylinders, you know, the legend of CBX.
Had you always wanted one? Had you been thinking about them?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I'm sure you've maybe had some cars over the years too, where it's like, of course, it's always in the back of your mind. Like, yeah, I would love to own a CBX someday.
Sure.
Until one shows up on Craigslist for $5,000, 20 minutes away from you. And of course, I just went to go buy it. And I'm a terrible negotiator. I've got some horror stories there from just being my stupid self. But the guy said, yeah, here, take it for a ride. Do you have your helmet? And I said, yep. I was driving a C4 Corvette at the time. So the guy kind of maybe figured I was into this kind of stuff. He was pretty comfortable letting me ride the bike. It was a rainy day. That's why I drove my car, of course. So this is when I'm testing a CBX for the first time. So I get on it and I just get out of his driveway and just rip it. And I swear, the smile on my face, I don't know if you could smile any more than just getting that bike into second, dropping it into third, and just winding it out to $8,000.
Man, not good for your negotiations when you come back.
No,
sold.
Yeah, so I drive back into his driveway and just like, again, like a dumb 25-year-old, like, I'll take it. Take my money, sir, please. I don't want this money anymore.
I didn't know you'd had that bike that long. I didn't know you had such a long history with it.
I've
seen you brought it out to a couple of alumni gatherings. Mm-hmm. And it's what? It's gone through various states of running and not running? Or what's the...
So again, stupid.
Six carburetors, right? Probably not the easiest thing to keep running.
No. Six carburetors. More importantly, three ignition coils, six spark plugs.
Right.
I would say a solenoid and electrical system that was probably also used on Honda's like 500cc models. I mean, you're not talking a lot of additional tech.
And there are 1100s? What's the displacement?
1047
okay,
cc's.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I actually bought that bike. Again, dumb kid. I was like, I live in Wisconsin now. I need something with a fairing because I was only riding Harleys, just Dynas at the time. I had a Dyna and a Sportster. And I was like, I'm living in Wisconsin. I need something that has a fairing so I can ride in the wintertime. So I rode this bike. I had my heated gear plugged in. That's how I found out that the electrical system is really not up to today's standards. I would ride to my office. I would ride it around a little. I would commute on it because at the office that I was working at, it was in downtown Madison. It was just my own personal office because I was working remotely at the time, but living in a little house. And I really didn't want to work out of my house. I'm like, I want to get away from my house to work. So I had my little office space and I could sneak a motorcycle onto the sidewalk there. But of course, downtown city, I'm not paying to park a car there.
Yeah, sure.
So I could park my bike on the sidewalk outside of the door and nobody would bother it. So I needed something for the wintertime. So that's when I got the CBX. It had these little, you know, fairings. If anyone is looking at one, they have these little fairings on each side of the engine that kind of keep the wind away from your
legs. As long as you keep the speed up, right? You got to keep the speed up.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. The fairing system is not really well designed. Kind of like everything Honda. It's like they really nail it on some aspects, but there's always like one thing on every Honda that's just like not quite there.
I imagine the motor and the gearbox are great though, right? That's like the Honda tradition.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I still have the stock exhaust system on it. And we list a lot of CBXs.
That's the best part, those six pipes coming out the front. That's how they hooked me the first time. First one I ever saw was at Jay Leno's place. And I was like, what is that? I mean, and the motor sticks out so far. Mm-hmm. I mean, a CB750 is also a great looking bike. And it's just that times 50% more.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I was going to say, you're talking about the exhaust system. When we list them, the six pipes coming out the front is one thing.
Yeah.
But when you have the systems where you have six pipes coming out the back, a true six into six
like a Benelli, right?
Yes,
or can you
exactly
get it for the Honda too?
So aftermarket companies will make them for Honda.
Right.
But yes, like the Benelli stock exhaust, the Benelli Psi stock exhaust system is like that. And when you get those six into six pipes, it just screams. I was not watching Formula One or IndyCar in the 80s, but supposedly that is about as close as you can get. So I've been told.
I definitely have gone down some YouTube rabbit holes with the Benelli 750 like exhaust sound videos. You said that they were relatively affordable, but the early bikes have gotten pretty pricey, haven't they? The early CBXs.
Yeah, they have been. The 81 and 82 models, that is when they came out with the fully fared touring examples. You're talking monoshocks, air adjustable suspension, some big old brakes to slow down rider, bike,
that
passenger
big double disc
gear.
Up front, right?
The double disc.
Yeah.
And I want to say Honda used this on one other bike, maybe an 81 Goldwing or some JDM bikes, but it's one of the only bikes to ever have a ventilated rotor.
Oh, wow.
So obviously on cars,
yeah,
you have a big old ventilated rotor. The CBX is one of the only ones to have that. So,
wow. Does it add weight when you're steering it?
You know, there's so much weight on that bike that
really
I'm sure it does, yeah. But that's not what you're not riding that bike thinking, going into a corner at, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour thinking, man, these massive ventilated rotors are really slowing me down on this one.
We don't have to talk about CBXs this whole time, but I am curious.
I'm fine with that.
I've always loved them. So just one last question, I promise. What differentiates the early bikes from the late ones? The early ones aren't fared in. Those are the ones that I always think of in my brain. What's the first year? There was 74, 75, something like that?
79 was the first
79?
Year.
79, okay.
Yep. All so right. 79, they came out and it was basically, like you mentioned the 750 earlier, mm-hmm. It was basically a 750 Supersport with a couple extra cylinders.
Yeah, okay.
And they're actually not that much wider, which a lot of people don't realize. They look really wide. But the way the generator connects with the crankshaft and area, they use a jack shaft that comes out, that connects to the crankshaft, then goes back to the motor. So the generator and stator are not on the crank itself. They're behind the engine above the transmission.
It's like a bevel drive or a gear off the...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, interesting. Wow. Man, I love those things. Have you ever... You were talking about you're a Harley guy, and I was thinking about this when you were talking about it. Have you ever ridden a Buell? That's another bike I think about a lot.
That's a great question.
Sorry, that's a little bit of a pivot, but I'm curious about it.
Well, they now look you got so me great, thinking.
But I don't know if they're any good to ride. They're so short coupled and they look great and they've got that great Harley sound.
Yes. They're amazing bikes. And we list a number of Buells, including some of Eric Buell's newest kind of super sport examples. The engineering.
Wait, can you buy a brand new Buell? Are they still making them?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
They're definitely called EBRs, okay. Eric Buell Racing. But I don't know if they're, I don't believe they're called Buell specifically.
Okay.
When I got into the Harley world in 2010 is kind of when I started as a magazine editor at American Iron Magazine. I think Buell had just folded.
Interesting.
In about 2009.
Wait, give me the primer on Buell's, like Harley's ownership of it and how it all works. Eric Buell was a racer, right? Originally?
Eric Buell is just one of these like jack of all trades in the motorcycle industry. He has just done anything and everything. And he's just one of these people. Who I know you're a history buff, and there's a lot of people in our American society who just are unstoppable in what they're going for.
A lot of great people in the automotive and motorcycle world.
Yeah,
like that,
exactly.
Right? Like a force of nature, a Carroll Shelby type or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Eric Buell is 100% that person. And he almost out-designed the marketplace. So he just made bikes that were so good that nobody really knew what to do with them,
yeah, okay.
So to speak.
And it was always Harley Motors in them?
Yeah. So the newest ones, I want to say they're Rotax motors.
Okay.
But no, otherwise, when Buell was owned by Harley, they used a version of the Sportster motor. So unit power plant, I think a 1250cc V-twin. Eric Buell, I think a lot of people really respect him now, certainly always, but now with the resurgence of kind of the interest in Harley's FXR models, which are made from 1982 to 1994, and then they came back for a couple years in 2000, 2001.
You have to tell me, what's an FXR? I don't even know. I'm such a dummy.
So FXR, no, it's so unfortunate. So like I said, I owned a Dyna previously, which is kind of like the Harley cruiser slash potentially performance capable bike. The FXR was Harley's answer to the Japanese motorcycles that had come in at that time and were taking over everything.
Yeah.
So they were Harley's answer and a very strong...
Reliability-wise, mainly, is that what they're thinking about?
They're thinking about performance, reliability...
Like rideability, too, right? Just a comfortable thing to use.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And just a bike that you could really just go out and treat like a motorcycle. By the early 80s, I suppose I would say, Harleys were... They were becoming big. They were becoming sort of your father. In the early 80s, they were your father's motorcycle. Certainly now they're your grandfather and... great-grandfather's motorcycle to some degree, even though they're coming back. They're doing some really cool things now. But yes, at the time that the FXR came out, people hated it. It had a triangular frame where the battery box was, which was a common Japanese bike theme, which strength, rigidity, ease of use, easy to mount a motor in it. And Harley guys hated it. They said, that looks too Japanese.
Oh,
I'm not riding that.
Yeah, okay.
And the FXR, it was used by police departments. it was really a wonderful bike. You know, of course, an Evo motor, you're talking an 80-inch, 82-inch air-cooled engine. I mean, you're maybe looking at like 45 horsepower. So there was always a little bit of a, it was always lacking a little bit, but you could work with that. And to me, that was kind of Eric Buell's, like, that was the cool thing. I think it's super cool that he built something from Harley, because he was an engineer working for Harley Davidson at that time.
And he's like, let's build a sport bike around this,
and
right?
And he just built in what a lot of people now come to believe is the ultimate version of the Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
And I certainly agree with them. It was a bike using American muscle, an American V-twin air-cooled engine, and putting it in a frame and chassis that could handle a little bit of thrown around.
And you said that those 80s Harley is kind of back in fashion now. People are interested in those again, that model.
Yeah, that started, which is...
Are we listing them on the site?
So we have listed FXRs. We've listed some really neat ones too. We listed one not too long ago that was, actually, I shouldn't say that. It was probably 3 years ago at this point. A beautiful twin cam powered FXR, fully fared, lovely bike, did really well on the site. But no, we haven't listed a ton of them. I almost think people maybe, we do have a staffer who I know rides one.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he's got I want to say it's an 88 anniversary edition. He's got the Olin shocks on it. It's a wonderful bike. And when I learned that he owned that, I was like, yeah, you and I are going to be okay. You know, I was like, yeah, you've got good taste.
Still a little bit of a sleeper, huh? Then
it is.
That's actually a good segue. As all of our listeners can tell, you are, there's a reason we call you the moto expert, Tyler. I'm definitely going to pick your brain on more models here in a minute.
You're scaring me.
But no. I want to talk a little bit about your role here. So you started as an auction specialist 5 years ago or so now.
Yes.
Before we started recording, you were joking about my kind of whimsical way of hiring you, which is the old school. We're fully professional now, Tyler, at Bring a Trailer.
It was great. I it was like, yes, I will. Or I think I maybe chase you back, or I think you hired me, but maybe didn't tell me at the time. And so I had to follow up and be like, am I hired? And it was a yes. And I've never looked back. Like I told you, I went out for champagne that night when you emailed me back saying like, oh yeah, can you start tomorrow? Like, honey, we're going out for champagne tonight.
We probably had all the work you could handle back then. Those were the Wild West days. It's all different now. No, it's been established on this podcast that we used to do things a little more whimsically here at BAT. But started as an auction specialist writing listings. And I can't remember if we had you doing bikes right at the beginning, but very quickly it became apparent that that was your forte.
Yeah, it was within, I would say, a couple months all of a sudden. You know, I had to learn the system.
I mean, we knew your background, we knew, obviously, but maybe weren't listing that many bikes back then. You've been a real advocate for getting more bikes on the site.
No, we were not listing a lot of bikes. I know even when we started to really list a lot of bikes, I was, I believe, the only person doing them for like 6 months to a year or so. And we're maybe listing 10 to 12 a week.
And it was really kind of special high-end stuff at that point, right? It was we do a lot more kind of broad selection. We used to do mini bikes a lot, right? What was the early stuff?
We still do. No, and it was a little bit of all the stuff you see today. Just, of course, when you're talking volume that's in the 10 a week, I mean, 40 a month we're talking that, which is crazy.
I mean, we were doing less than a quarter of the weekly volume that we're doing now too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're doing maybe 150 listings a week, and now we're doing that every day. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the stuff that we're coming through, it's hard to say whether or not it was a lot different. Certainly we had some wonderful Vincents over the years, some nice Indians, but no, that stuff has really come in just like the last 2 years. And a lot of that is just due to the fact that we've actually looked into motorcycle enthusiasts in terms of buying and selling, what they're really looking for in bikes. And how can we actually represent them and be a part of this community and not just think of them as a sideshow?
Yes.
So I was basically...
And your team takes that stuff very seriously,
oh,
right?
Yes.
Like you've got all kind of... Maybe talk a little bit about how you've evolved this team that works for you and that you oversee now that's almost like a little skunk works within BAT just doing the motorcycle listings.
Dude, I love that. I had never thought of us being as like a skunk works.
You totally
at BAT.
Are. You totally are. We that all know it's 100%. In good hands. You're overseeing it and we know that it's in good hands.
Dude, that is a great way. I can't wait to go back and tell the team that that's the way you think of us, because that is awesome.
Well, it's a reliable, amazing group of people. And so, I mean, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how that evolved and kind of where we're at now. I mean, I know you have the numbers just on the tip of your tongue, but like the amount of bike volume we're doing now is pretty mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we found a, not like real surprising to a lot of people, but we just found a couple things that were really important that we started focusing on like 3 years ago, I want to say. We've had kind of a legitimate and, as you said, a skunk works. We've had an actual known moto team at BAT for about 2.5 years now that was actually developed. And before that...
Put together by you to a large extent, right?
Yeah, it started with a group of people who I was working with, and we were all working together. And all of a sudden, you started to see these people pop up who just really understood what it was we were going for. And to be honest with you, I mean, like...
And we're fellow riders, or most of them, right? Everyone is. Yeah.
Yep. Everyone on the BAT Moto team rides. They ride all sorts of different bikes. We have guys who are into... We have one guy who collects small displacement Hondas, like CT70s. I think he might have a CB125. I don't know if he goes that big yet, though. So he just loves
these
small...
That's too much displacement.
Yeah, but he loves these bikes, and he stuffs them in his station wagon to go places. It's so cool.
Which is also a type of buyer, right? Like, one of the reasons that I want you to talk about this is because it reflects the people in our community, right? Like, people are passionate about those bikes. We list a ton of those small displacement Hondas.
I know. I mean, the shocking one to me is these Z50 RD Christmas specials that we list. And I was actually not aware of these. Like, I kind of knew, like, I'm sure I have seen them before, but all of a sudden we list one and it sells for $25,000. And I'm like, what? Like, what is going on? What is this thing? And then we list another one. $18,000, another one, $25,000. And all of a sudden, I know we had one gentleman selling who, he insisted that it had to go live before Christmas. And we actually had another one live and we didn't really want to. Oh my God, we're backed up with the Christmas specials? Yeah, we were backed up on Christmas specials. And we were still, you know, again, the volume wasn't there where we were really like comfortable or we weren't sure what we were looking at. It was still in the early, you know, the early phases of this. And this gentleman did not want to go live after Christmas. So we said, fine. And we ended up listing like one a month and they all did well for the next year. So, and honestly, for all I know, it could have been, he could have come back.
Can you school our readers and me on what exactly that is, the Christmas special? This is the little 50cc mini bike, right? A version of it.
Yes. This is Honda's 49cc mini bike. So the bike itself, super cool, all chrome. It's got Honda's 49cc OHV single and it's entirely chrome and red. I want to say it's an 86. It was an 86 only. I could be wrong. I'm basing that off of my favorite Honda logo, which is the red, white, and blue Honda Wing logo,
yes.
Which is present
totally.
On that tank.
Yeah.
I used to have one on the back of my old truck because I just love that 1986 Honda red, white, and blue Wing logo
so much. I'm with you, dude. We were talking about red, white, and blue Hondas right before we started recording. Yeah, they're the best.
I am of the very much of the persuasion that 1986 for Honda is the best year for any vehicle manufacturer ever. And I'm sure there's a lot of disagreement there, but that is my gut telling me that, and I'm sticking to it.
That's great. Sorry, I've led you down all these different meandering pathways.
I understand the podcast takes tangents from time to time.
Totally, and I'm terrible at this. I've received some feedback about it, so I got to try to be more organized, Tyler. So talking a little bit about where we were and where we've come. How many bikes are we doing a week, a year? I know we want to shoot for the moon and list all of them, but the numbers are impressive. How many folks do you have on your team now and how many bikes are you pushing out onto the site every week? And you do not just bikes, but snow runners and snowmobiles and all that kind of stuff too, right? Kind of power sports, the Honda Pilots that everyone loves.
Yes.
Speaking of great 80s Honda stuff.
Oh my
stuff.
God, yes. I've never driven one. but yeah, so that was kind of where we started listing all these motorcycles. And all of a sudden there was a group of people, including myself, who was really into these bikes. And I would imagine listing motorcycles or what our team was experiencing maybe 3 years ago or so is kind of what I imagined the early days of BAT to be like, where we're fighting for every single sale.
Yeah.
We're fighting for every single seller to have the best possible experience, something I think we still very much do, but there was a little bit of an extra fire, I think, for the motorcycle folks at BAT to really, you know, because we know people have a great experience with one bike. It's not impossible to have 20 other great bikes in one garage space.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so we know that these people have so many bikes and we would love to kind of earn their business. So we really focused on just super high quality, fantastic customer service. And again, this is something that I think we do across the board, but we really had that. We had a little bit of a chip on our shoulders, as you may know, if you follow live auctions, tent auctions, what some other folks have been doing over the years with motorcycles. I mean, they've traditionally been a bit of a sideshow in this space. And
there's one dedicated big one, right? Is it Mecum or Barrett? One of them puts on a big motor
auction. Mecum.
That's about it, right? Everything else is a sideshow largely, right?
Yes, exactly. So Mecum has their big January auction in Las Vegas, which is motorcycles and kind of memorabilia.
Collectible items?
Sure.
Throw in the other junk with it.
What is? Yeah, all the other junk that goes with it.
Anything that's not a car.
So yeah, so they were basically it, but nobody really ever has successfully, in my opinion, combined the two together.
Yep.
So putting fantastic motorcycles alongside fantastic cars and putting them out in front of everybody and treating them each with the same level of respect.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to do live. I mean, you know, the costs involved and, you know, the commissions involved, you know, you're just not getting the commissions sure. on a bike sale.
But that's always been part of our DNA for cheap cars, as you know, too. Or sorry, I don't mean cheap in a derogatory way, but like, you know, we'll treat a $5,000 project the same way we treat a $500,000 Ferrari. That's like a big kind of democratic value that we've always had at BAT. So the bikes fit perfectly into that.
Yeah, we have folks on the team who, and I'll get involved in, and maybe even have to kind of settle them down sometimes about debating on whether or not this, like, it's not even a Honda, let's say, like some $1,500 moped, let's say, and whether it's an 86 or an 87, and because the serial number could fall between each one. And I'm like, guys, let's just get this one going.
But man, so awesome to have people like that on the team who care that much.
I know. And
like,
how do I? I can't tell them not to.
I know you get this kind of feedback from our sellers, but how can that not feel validating to somebody who cares as, you know, these staffers care as much about these bikes and the, you know, minutia as the people who own them, right? Like there's a shared nuttiness, right, with all these people.
Oh, and that's again, a
and you're
great
part of
way
the problem.
Of, I know. I probably said something to someone on my team along the way, and now they just always have to dive into everything. Yep. And yeah, like I said, there's for sure a bit of nuttiness, as I'm often told in staff events. You know, I'm the guy that likes helicopters instead of planes, but we don't have to go down that rabbit hole just yet. But that's kind of part of being into motorcycles.
Are you serious about that? You like helicopters rather?
Oh,
is that a joke?
Oh my God, yes. No.
Oh my God.
No, I'm all about the rotary wing.
Okay, did you see on YouTube the big helicopter expo that was just in Southern California, and they fly them and put them all in the... We need to go to that sometime. We're not talking helicopters.
No, too far of a tangent.
No, we're staying on target.
I shouldn't have said anything. I'm
no,
sorry.
But you did actually bring up something else good that I wanted to talk about, which was events.
Yes.
We always like to encourage bikes to come out to our alumni gatherings, and we've had a fair amount. You've been at a lot of alumni gatherings. Not only do you live in Monterey, where kind of annually we tend to have a big, huge blowout alumni gathering, but you've come, you know, I think you were at the Indiana event. I think we were at another event.
Oh, I've been to Indiana, Iola, Wisconsin.
That's right. We were at that one together.
Our Seattle event, which may have been one of the craziest.
That was such a sick event. And it had all these get good bikes, right?
Yes. The Seattle event, I think, had one of the best motorcycle attendance rates that we've had. And there's so much fun. And I just love seeing them come out. And you always get great parking with a motorcycle.
Totally, right up front.
I mean, like I said, with my old office, I used to park on the sidewalk in front of the door. Uh-huh. Like, if you bring a motorcycle to one of our alumni events, like, we could probably find a great spot for you.
Hell yes.
Yeah, for sure. But yes, for the first time last year, last May, we partnered with The Quail, who a lot of automotive enthusiasts know for their annual Car Week.
Oh, event. Shoot, that's right. But this is not the Quail. This is a different This is a different Quail event, right?
Yeah. So you've heard of the Quail, a motorsports gathering.
Right, which is in association with Car Week and the Pebble Beach Concours, right? Same weekend.
This is the Quail Motorcycle Gathering.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Which is basically the Pebble Beach for motorcycles. And I think some people might argue it's more fun. I've gone to Pebble quite a bit.
And you don't have the insanity of Car Week to deal with. It's usually a couple months before, right?
It's in May.
Yeah, okay.
So it's in May. And for the first time last year, we partnered with them. We sponsored some various aspects of it. They do a fabulous ride the day before, 100 miles, 100 bikes, 2 laps at Laguna Seca, which I got to take part in.
You were on the ride?
Yes. And like I said, we talked earlier about my maintenance problem with keeping bikes running because I work a lot, but then also would like to ride, but then probably have, like, you should really only have just one motorcycle that you take really good care of is probably the answer. And I have like
car people have this problem too, Tyler. And in fact, I don't want to embarrass you too much, but you're also a car person and an RV person. So you've got really crazy person problems.
Yeah, exactly. I had an RV for a while. And honestly, like the best day of my life was when I finally sold it for a substantial loss. And I was like the happiest camper you could ever imagine. I'm like, I'm going back to the rooftop tent on my Tahoe. And not dealing with a generator or plumbing system or parts that don't really exist. But that's, again, a whole other podcast.
No. Sorry, I'm digressing too much. Tell us about the ride.
We have to hang out more.
I know we do, dude. I know.
It's a problem.
And maybe not in front of the listening public where we can talk a little more smack. Tell me about the ride, where it goes for the Quail and what that was like.
So, like I said, I live in Carmel, so right next to Monterey. We are probably best known for, I would say, for the automotive and motorcycle crowd. Is the PCH. I'm sure you've taken a rip or two down to Big Sur.
Many times,
over
dude.
The
I
years.
Grew up in San Luis Obispo.
You've gone up to Big Sur then. So that is kind of our obvious big route, but there's a lesser known route, which is taking Carmel Valley Road out to the 101 through the Salinas Valley. And that's my personal favorite ride. There's low traffic. Anytime you get behind a car, another thing I love about California is people think about motorcycles here, which I've never experienced anywhere else that I've lived. And you're riding on this road and cars will pull over. They'll slam on their brakes and pull off the road as soon as you get behind them on Carmel Valley Road, which I love. So we ripped down there, hopped on River Road and 101 Highway, which combine over there. And I can't remember if I was aware of this. It might have been a surprise to me. We got to do two laps of Laguna Seca. And where I was going with my little anecdote earlier was terrible at bike maintenance. The only freaking motorcycle that I could start was my Harley.
So you did this all
so badly. I so terribly badly wanted to take my CBX. It would have been the only one there. Okay, it's a very cool bike. I mean, like I said, the cost of ownership for a lot of these really great motorcycles is so low. So it's not like, you know, I'm on the podcast talking about my like 275
GTB
4 cam alloy body, know, and like thinking that I need to like, oh, I need to take that on the ride.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, I wanted to take my CBX because I'm really proud of it. I love the bike. It would have been so much fun to have. And I had just ridden it like the week before. And of course, anything old, it's like it never works when you really need it to.
Yep.
So after swearing at it in my garage, I don't think I threw anything that time. But after being really upset.
You were like, thinking about it.
I was thinking about it. I was thinking about throwing the bike. If I could lift 560 pounds, I would have thrown the bike. So I go over to my Harley. Of course, that didn't start either. But at least that. It's a 2015. Put a couple alligator clamps on it, jump started it, and fired right up. So I've ridden my Harley on Laguna Seca.
That's amazing.
And I did it at speed. That was fun. You know, there's an old saying where like sometimes it's more fun to take a slow bike fast than it is to take a fast bike slow.
Sure.
This was one of those instances where I was taking a slow bike really, really fast. And it was a lot of fun.
What a treat, man. I'm really
it was a lot of fun.
Really bummed I missed that. I heard it was a great experience. I want to hear what because we did an alumni event there as well. And I want to hear what that was like. But what was the mix of bikes like on the ride? These are bikes that are going to be shown at the show later, or this is just for spectators, or how does that work?
Some were going to be shown at the event the following day. A lot
so
of
that means some pretty serious stuff, right?
Yeah.
The Quail doesn't mess around with their curation.
No, it doesn't. And I would imagine very small numbers we're talking that would actually be displayed the next day, because that's a really, just like with Pebble Beach, they do that fantastic drive down to Big Sur on Thursday morning, which I've had the pleasure of going on.
Oh, that's the
once.
Your car has to do it to be eligible for the top prize, right? You've got your car's got to run and go on
top,
the thing.
The top prize is a great question. I know if there's ever a tie break that needs to happen, if your car has gone on the tour, you're the one that gets the prize. So I was lucky enough, a friend of mine happened to have a 4-seat, it was an 8C Alpha 2 years ago. And when there's a back seat and it's like, okay, hop on. Like there was only two, it was actually my dad, the owner of the car, and the mechanic. And
the mechanic.
You got it. I mean, you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah, I've seen I love seeing the rich guys sweat bullets, you know, when they're getting judged on at Pebble and every light has to work and everything has to function. And you can just see when you're that wealthy to have a car on the lawn at Pebble, there's not a lot you're worried about in life, but man, they worry about the,
I'll tell you, you know. but that also, I mean, that's kind of fun.
It's
like,
awesome.
Like you would think that at that level, like some of the cars, you're talking the millions of dollars.
And if you can afford the ticket, you can sit there and watch it. You can watch the guy sweat bullets and watch it. That's amazing.
I was standing right there watching these people waiting for the caller to kind of, he does a fun little dance. I don't know if it's a dance, but he does this fun like pointing thing where it's like you never really know who he's going to end up with. Mm-hmm. And then it ends on you and you actually don't want him to point to you because that means that you're second or third.
Totally.
So you want the fingers to stay very far away from pointing towards your car. But fantastic drive on that. But very similar on the Quail ride, other than, like I said, only a couple bikes, I think, actually made it to the show field the next day. But no, a mix of everything, some modern stuff. I want to say, actually, so we did a fun thing. So kind of to bring this whole story into perspective, I think one of the fun things that we did, we sponsored that ride in its entirety. It was brought to you by Bring a Trailer. There's a fantastic dinner that night for everybody who was on the ride, some judges. Just what a fun group of people.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I know there's a lot of fun people in the car world. I've been involved in a lot of events and I know there's great people, but I feel like nobody quite gets down at a fancy dinner at the Quail Lodge like the motorcycle people. You know what I mean? It was definitely, we had some staffers in attendance, and I think they may have been even a little shocked by that too.
Yeah,
I think they
were
expecting the stuffiness, and what they got was pretty standard motorcycle dinner,
That's so great, man.
And we gave out these awards. So part of our sponsoring the dinner was we wanted to do something really fun. So we gave out these awards, like who rode here from the furthest.
Oh, wow. What was that? Out of curiosity, anybody do 1,000 miles?
No. And that's where I started with two, which was kind of funny. I started with 1,000, no takers, went down to like 600, no takers. And because I wasn't quite sure what to expect.
Totally.
It was so not great weather last year.
Yeah. Okay.
So still, I mean, honestly, you didn't really notice it because you still have these fantastic bikes that are all in one lawn in one place at the same time.
Yeah.
That people had
missed. Wasn't noticeable. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, okay. It was fantastic. And we had 60 bikes in our alumni gathering.
Wow.
But we'll cut to that next. But yeah, so we gave out these awards, and to talk to you about the oldest bike that was on the ride, it was a 1940 Indian. So there was one gentleman who won both the oldest bike on the ride and the oldest rider award.
No kidding.
The oldest rider on the ride with the, and I want to say he was well into his 70s too. And that was another awkward one to start at. I'm like, like, wait, do I start low and go high on these, or do I start high and
who's 100?
Exactly. I was like, wait a second. I hadn't really thought about it until I got up on stage and had to call out these awards and figure out who was who.
Yeah,
and I'm like, wait a second. What's the protocol here?
Yeah. And then what was the event like the day itself? They do a featured mark usually, right? Because I had the honor and privilege of going to the Quail Motorsports gathering a couple of years ago with Randy, our founder, and Lamborghini Aceleros were the featured mark. There were like 20 of them. It was crazy, were the featured cars. So do they do the same kind of thing for bikes?
Yeah. Yes, they do. And to be honest with you, I actually didn't get enough of an opportunity to go check out the Quail.
Tyler.
Oh, I was working, man.
I know.
I was working.
No, that's true. I forgot about that because we had an alumni event. So you got to press the flesh, which is important.
So we had.
That happens. That's one of the downsides to BAT events. This happens sometimes at Monterey. It was so slammed at Monterey this year, as you'll remember. I didn't get a chance to go walk the paddock or do anything because we just people all day long, which is great. But also like, I like racing too, man.
Oh, I know. In fact, I've been to now, I want to say three alumni events at Monterey. And I've the only time I've ever actually been to the paddock during a vintage race series was when we sponsored the Laps for Laguna.
Oh, yes.
Event.
Yeah, totally.
I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I know you were there and we were able to walk around, check out the paddock because we weren't really doing.
We didn't have hosting duties.
Yeah, there was no hosting duty.
Yeah.
So it was like, I was like, I'm enjoying this as a spectator.
I know.
And that's never been. You know, that's never been my experience. I've worked in the car and motorcycle, or actually the motorcycle industry. This BAT is the first time I've ever actually worked in the car world. I've only ever worked with motorcycles. And whenever I go into an event, I'm there either covering it or I'm working with someone or I'm doing something that's work related. So I've been to a lot of events, but I unfortunately never seem to like get that true consumer experience until Laps for Laguna, which the folks there, and of course, Randy was kind enough to include me on that.
Just to tie a bow on the Quail thing, I'm bummed that I missed it, jealous that you got to do it, and I really hope we get to do that again in the future this year or in another year, because I think that would be, sounds like it was just a great experience for everyone involved.
Yeah, it really was. We had no idea what to expect. It was our first time doing a motorcycle-specific event, and like we've kind of covered, you know, motorcycles have always been at the top of my mind and top of my team's mind. We really haven't had them involved directly. You know, they've been showing up to alumni events, of course. And I always love talking to those folks who bring them. I'm always making sure I run up to them right away. But we haven't really done anything that was only motorcycles. So totally breaking new ground for us. We set up preparing for tons of people to show up and for a massive event. And at the same
time, and then they showed up.
And people showed up. Alex, let me tell you, people showed up. There was one, and then there was three, and then there was four, and then there was 15. And the craziest thing was they all brought something cool.
Were there bikes that showed up that you remembered from the
site? There was a beautiful R90S from this one gentleman who he won the Quail, I want to say best in show, a few years ago with an Daytona Orange BMW R90S.
Ooh.
And he's now sold two of them with us, both of which achieved record $60,000 price points.
Wow.
So clearly his...
He's got the best ones.
Yeah. So we don't throw this word around very often, but his restorations are quite spectacular.
Oh, he's the restorer too.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And a wonderful guy who I had the pleasure of meeting and riding with. So that was a blast. And yeah, so he brought one of his bikes. We had like one of everything. A Modus showed up.
I don't know what that is. No, I don't even know what that is.
Alex. Oh, man.
I like the weird stuff, too. Weird already. Tell me what it is.
Okay, so think of this. Think of a Corvette, a pushrod Corvette engine, late model pushrod LS, I guess you could say. Now, remove a couple cylinders and put it in a motorcycle.
What's the engine configuration?
It's a V4.
No kidding. Is it the V sideways? Which way is it? Moto Guzzi style or is it Honda style sitting in there?
Well, so it's funny that you say that. So Honda did also make a...
They made one that was where the V was sticking out.
Actually, one of the folks on our team rides a Silverwing. He's actually, he was there at this event. And the entire time, all he could talk about was how upset he was that he didn't have his Silverwing with him.
Oh, I bet. Yeah,
and I felt
totally.
So bad for him.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, just send it out to my house. We'll put it in my garage and then come and ride it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough place to not have a motorcycle.
What say the name of the manufacturer, Motus?
Motus. M-O-T-U-S.
Is it Low Run or what's the deal with
it? Oh, it's Low Run. They're gone.
Okay.
They basically did, there's probably some crossover with cars
American?
Too. Yes, American. Okay. There's some crossover with cars, I'm sure, where they came out, just built what may very well be one of the best all-around motorcycles ever made.
No kidding. What's the era of this, Tyler?
This would have been late teens, you know, recent teens.
Yeah.
Of course, when we talk motorcycles, and you say teens.
Oh, you have to be careful because we've had some 100-year-old bikes too.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the event, the Motorcycle Cannonball, but the first one, I had the pleasure of being a crew member on the first Motorcycle Cannonball, which is cross country. So from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina to the end of the Santa Monica Pier.
Wow.
On 1915 and older motorcycles.
No kidding.
And there were three classes. You had a singles class, you had a twin, no transmission class. So twin single speed, and then twin three speed.
Wow. What's the time frame to get across the country?
It took us 3 weeks.
Man.
We did I was driving the truck and just adjusting valves at the end of the day, putting stuff together.
Exposed valves on a lot of those probably, right?
It's an IOE, so intake over, inlet over maybe is how they used to call it, inlet over exhaust design. And yeah, some of them are very much, at least the intake. So the intake is exposed. Now that I'm picturing the engine, this is how I do things. We had a question. I'm sorry with the tangents, but we had a question recently to talk about some of the work that I do. We had a question on a live auction recently about a certain part inside of a 1960s Bonneville, probably a T120R engine. And the way I always do things is I have to go into that engine in my mind to figure out where these parts are. And we had the added problem of, I believe the seller was using the British terminology this part was.
Yep.
So he was, I think, calling it, I can't remember what it was, but it was like a collar that we would call a shim, perhaps. And so I was on the internet trying to learn. I've never been in a Bonneville engine before. So I had to learn all about this and then provide an answer to our live auction support team and be like, yes, he's correct. Feel free to use his terminology. he's not wrong. You can run with that.
This is the kind of expertise you get at Bring a Trailer when you bring your motorcycle.
Exactly.
Here.
So when you have something that I've never actually worked on before, I need to basically learn all about it.
Totally.
And
I'm the same way. I've got to see it visually to understand it, especially when you're talking about the internal functioning of an engine or even suspension or whatever, right?
Kind of closing up on our event at the Quail, huge success. We ended up with 60 bikes. And like I said, they were just all different. We had a couple previous Quail winners.
Any Ariel Square 4s? Speaking of weird bikes, I know we've sold a couple of those. I love the Square 4.
There's been a handful of bikes that come to our site, and I know you refer to me as the moto expert, and there's bikes that I've just never even heard of before. And that is one of them.
Square 4 is so cool.
I was not aware of until a few years ago, and we got our first one in.
It's basically two parallel twins next to each other, right? I can't remember if it has two cranks or not.
Yes, it has two cranks.
And then they're geared together somehow.
One
right?
cylinder.
Yeah, okay. It's one big extra with four pistons inside it, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then the head, I'm trying to think of the head configuration. I don't know, is that overhead valve? Do you know offhand?
I think they're overhead valve, but somebody's probably screaming at their radio right now. I can't remember, but it is literally four cylinders in a square, right? It's like two parallel twins next to each
other. It's the craziest thing, and I don't know how
it doesn't
overheat.
I think they work just fine, too.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Something else, as long as we're on the topic of weird engines, but how do you feel about rotaries in motorcycles?
We listed one recently, didn't we?
The big one that we listed recently was,
Did anyone do that from the factory, or do you have to swap to do that?
No, that was done. The best known one was Suzuki, the RE5.
Is that a single rotor?
Well, now you're kind of
pushing it a little bit.
These are rotaries, yeah, totally. Okay? Like, I could tell you how many cylinders something has by looking for spark plugs. I have no idea what the inside of a rotary looks like.
So that was a Suzuki, you said?
Yeah, so Suzuki did it en masse. But the one we listed recently...
Presumably licensing the patent from Mazda, right? I imagine at that
time. That is a great question. So we refer to it as a Wankel rotary, if that helps?
Yes. I mean, I believe that was Mercedes originally after Wankel patented it.
Wankel, thank you for the pronunciation.
I think that's how you would say it.
I'm used to writing these things. One of the weird parts about working on the internet and then coming onto a podcast is like, wait a second.
The worst is when you have Randy sitting here and he's a German speaker and he corrects you on... Ricaro, Wankel, 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 whatever it is.
Yeah, I still try to avoid pronouncing Porsche whenever I can.
Oh my God.
Because I never know with whom am I speaking and how I should pronounce it to that person. I feel like that matters.
I still wince when I hear Porsche. I heard it yesterday. People still say it all the time. It's fine. It doesn't matter.
I've learned that I need to say Porsche.
Yes, that's right. You're a Porsche owner now.
Yes,
Tyler,
I am, and that is why I learned that I need to pronounce it properly.
We've brought you to the dark side, man.
I know.
Any other? God, we could go on forever. Almost an hour here, man. I was going to hit you with a lightning round.
Let's do it.
Do you want to do a lightning round? And we're going to have you back, obviously. And for listeners, one of the reasons I was so excited to have Tyler on today is, as you can tell, he's got such a wealth of motorcycle knowledge, and we have a lot of potential guests and a lot of people who are interested in bikes. And so we want to bring Tyler into more of those conversations so that he doesn't sound like an idiot like I do when we're talking about motorcycles. And Zach is bummed he's not here today because he wanted to take bikes
with
you
know.
Too.
Zach, I found out, I caught up on the podcast on my drive up here this afternoon, and I found out Zach has wonderful taste in motorcycles.
Oh, yes, fantastic.
NC400s, some other, VFR 400.
He had a Triumph, I think a Speed Triple, whatever, the real hot Triumph, like kind of late model Triumph.
Sure.
He had a Ducati. He's had, just like with cars, Tyler, you won't be surprised. He has impeccable taste.
I know. I was not surprised by any means, but it was a very, very nice treat.
We got to get him in here instead of me. Yeah, let's do a quick lightning round.
Okay, what you got?
So what was your first bike, Tyler?
My first bike
And how
ever.
Old were you?
Oh my God. Okay. So my first bike ever, I was 20, and my buddy Tim and I, this would have been back in probably 08, I would say, 2008. So like, the cafe racer scene, it was it.
Yeah.
Like if you didn't have a cafe racer, you were nobody. Okay. Like if you didn't take your
and they
beautiful,
were real stripped down and minimalist
yes,
back then, right?
Yeah. If you didn't take your like beautiful original paint, totally unrestored, nothing Honda that would be like worth a lot today. If you didn't take that bike and cut it up and turn it into a cafe racer using fiberglass parts and like visible welds. Speaking of the devil,
there's our motorcycle shop next door. Yeah, they're tuning up a bike right now.
I always love being at the office and hearing that go by.
Yeah.
So we bought a 1971 Honda CB450.
Oh, man. Sick.
And we took a turn riding it, and then we started tearing it apart. And to this day, that bike is still in pieces.
You still have it.
So I got tired of it, and I gave
that's
it to my cousin
small,
Noah.
That's the high-revving four-cylinder, or that's a twin?
It's a fantastic bike. I actually ended up getting another one shortly thereafter because it was such a fantastic engine that I wanted to really experience it.
Yeah.
It is actually the first production engine of cars and motorcycles to produce 100 horsepower per liter.
Wow. And it's a four?
It's a twin.
It's a twin, okay.
444cc twin.
Honda also had very early six and five speeds too, right? Would that have had a five?
That was a five speed.
Five speed, yeah.
Yep. So the, I want to say the four speed would have gone up to like 68, 69, and then around 70, 71, they brought that up to a five. So it was a 44 horsepower five speed. On the second one that I bought, I took it on two big like public kind of open rides. And I used it all the time around my house. I love that bike. I put thousands of miles on it.
And pretty light, I would imagine. And
it's not super light. It's all metal.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's all steel and chrome.
Yeah.
It's designed for the American market. So actually at 6'1", it's a very comfortable bike. And oh man, so much fun to work on. So much fun to ride. I that's one of my ones where I would love to have.
You gonna put that
one
first one back together, man? You gotta put it back together.
Okay. So it's in the process. So my cousin, who's a mechanic who actually knows what he's doing with this stuff, another Porsche head. He's got a couple 944s, a lot of fun stuff. He's always doing engine swaps or whatever. So after years, this bike was still sitting in pieces and I just wasn't getting to it. And my interests had kind of changed. So I gave it to him. He's been slowly working. He's had kids. He's kind of been busy at work and he's slowly working on this bike. And I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to see that bike.
Amazing.
I'm going to ride it.
Amazing.
And it's his. I I'm like, Noah, you can do like, you can do more with this bike than I can. He's got this amazing, I want to say it's a 60, maybe a 70, a 70, 71 C10 on airbags, long bed. He's got, it's satin black. He's got his mechanic. Him and my uncle have a shop. That's kind of, you know, my uncle is kind of who I got into all this stuff from, I would say, my Uncle Ron. So give him a little bit of a shout out and thank you.
Uncle Ron.
Yeah. So he's a race car driver, everything. So they've got a wonderful shop in Milwaukee. And so on his C10, he has the shop name on it. And I believe what he's working on is putting the bike together to kind of keep in the bed of the truck. So they're about the same year, 70, 71.
Little matching set.
Yeah, and have the matching. And they could really kind of show off the shop and what they're doing. And yeah, he's putting it all together. He's doing all sorts of crazy stuff with the engine cams, different cylinder heads from a 500 or a case from a 500. I can't remember. Nothing that I could even remotely think of doing or was thinking of doing.
Man, that thing's going to be sick.
I know. I know. It's been, God, 20 years. Is my math right on that?
2008? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting close
to close
it.
To 20 year
16
project.
Years. Oh, yeah, no. Jeez. Well, oh, I mean, man. They can go longer. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
What about favorite bike, Tyler? Is it CBX?
What's God, you know, it's funny.
When, you can't pick. Can't
no,
pick
I probably could when it comes to motorcycles. It feels silly to say that you have your favorite. Like that's just not the case in the car world. I mean, with the folks we talked about earlier who were trying to get their glove box lights working for the judges at Pebble, you know, maybe those guys can have their favorite cars. Mm-hmm. Like if I had my favorite car, you know, it would be something with a probably a Prancing Horse logo somewhere on it. Right. And with bikes, you actually can do that.
Yeah.
So I'm changing all over the place. Honestly, like one of my favorite bikes is, and again, podcast at Bring a Trailer if you'd like to part with one. Right? Totally. Is that a good shout out for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know we like to get those in every so often.
From feedback to podcast at bringatrailer.com or if you want to sell Tyler your motorcycle. Or better yet, just list it on the site and
No,
I'm teasing. tell us though, what's the one?
And we don't list. So there's two bikes actually, and they're very similar, and I feel like you almost have to have them in a pair. One is a 1987-88 Ducati Passo 750. So Massimo Tamburini design. Really kind of the first fully fared in motorcycle. And like we've talked about, weird styling that just was not appreciated or liked at the time.
Is it still the classic 900 with the leaned over V-twin with the cylinder sticking forward?
No, this would be a 750.
Oh, 750, that's
so
right.
750, and I want to say with Weber carburetors.
Well, okay.
There is a Mikuni conversion that you can do, but the Weber carburetor sounds kind of
cool. From Italy, man,
and
too.
I know, right. And it's like,
it feels right.
Yeah, you kind of have to have that.
Yeah.
So we actually have a 907 live right now from one of our regular sellers based out of Wisconsin. And he's got this 907, which is kind of the same thing, but with bigger motor, obviously, and fuel injection.
Oh, interesting.
And a 17-inch front wheel. So the one that I like, the 87-88, has a 16-inch front wheel.
Okay.
Which I want to say you can maybe get a tire for now. But they also realized very quickly that the bikes could not handle well on the track with a 16-inch front wheel.
Okay.
And so, of course, the number two bike on my list is the 86 Honda VFR 750F. The RC30 would be great. I would love it. But my price point is more along the lines of the kind of homologator. I guess that would be the homologated version, but it would be the kind of the street version, the everyman version.
But with the looks, the same
But with all the looks, I don't need the single-sided swing arm that you and Zach geeked out a little bit a couple weeks ago about, which was awesome.
All the better to see that awesome white wheel, though, man.
The wheels are still white
on
the one I like.
It's crucial.
We've only listed one of those.
Yeah.
So I don't know where these kinds of bikes that you and I have talked otherwise about, like stuff that's rare and cool now, you know, is going to be kind of the next big thing. And these bikes, all of a sudden, there was a period where you could find them and they're still not expensive. I mean, we're talking, you know, $7,000-$8,000 for a fantastic example.
Yeah.
If you could find one, you know, so again, podcast that.
I love it. Amazing. We're on the
same thing.
We're all vibing. One more because we can do this forever.
Sorry,
we're gonna have you back too. Favorite bike you either worked on as it came through Bring a Trailer or that we listed even if you didn't work on it? Do you have one there? Or at least a highlight recently or something you could point to? We always like to point people back to the actual website we work for.
Yes. So. There's a couple.
We've had some Steve McQueen bikes. We've had some great Vincents, like you said. I love Vincents. We had that, I think it was the first Sandcast 750 Honda we had. That thing went crazy. Remember that?
There was the Sandcast that was owned by Steve McQueen.
That's right. We had that wasn't the first one we had.
No, it wasn't the first
McQueen's.
One.
Yeah. That's right.
And the one that was owned by Steve McQueen went wild. $155,000.
Is that our record sale for a bike?
No, it's not.
Oh,
and where I was going to go with my answering your question was 2-hour record sale, which was a 1930 Indian 4.
Oh, an Indian 4.
That sold just a month ago, January 20th. for $205K.
Oh, man.
And up until now, I've basically been like all giddy at the $100K mark.
Yeah.
Thinking like, oh, man, how many $100,000 bikes are we going to list this year? So excited for this next year. You know, the motorcycle season kind of starts in like the Harley world where I used to work. We used to consider the season Daytona to Sturgis.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah. which was awesome. Yeah, so you totally. Went to Daytona to start the season and you finished it up in Sturgis. And then it was like back to the garage and like, you know, trying to get some office work done for the next 6 months. And this Indian just came out of nowhere. It was at no reserve, mind you. Okay. Awesome. This gentleman brought this bike in at no reserve. It is another term that I'm sure folks are tired of hearing. Total kind of barn find condition. So it didn't have the dirt on it. It was cleaned up nicely.
But
it was just, just very much as it was certainly 50 years ago and possibly.
And well find earlier. Another one like that, right? Like when that comes up, you got to, if you want that, you got to.
And the seller did something really fantastic with this bike. He got it totally right. This bike's a total runner. It's awesome. Got new tires on it, all new ignition system. This bike is gone through and can be ridden as is. And it's a four cylinder. I mean, it could be ridden. I mean, pretty extensively.
You could use it kind of like a regular bike. Yeah.
It's not unusable. Like I said, I've seen people use teens motorcycles regularly. It's not impossible. So that one was.
But an Indian 4's got a little bit of power, right? I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever ridden one?
No. I've only ridden a hand clutch motorcycle once.
This is a impromptu lightning round question. What are the bikes that you wish you could ride? Like, you know, what's on the bucket list for just getting a ride?
Yeah. So, you know, you didn't do this on purpose. We didn't talk about this, but the other bike that we've listed is actually very close to being it. We listed a 1954 Vincent Black Shadow. Mm. It was from a wonderful seller who owns a shop, and I don't have the name of the shop offhand. I don't think she mentioned it in the listing. Listed this Black Shadow on behalf of a client who had owned this bike for 54 years. And the coolest thing was he put a Quaife 5-speed in it.
Oh, I remember that one. Yes, that's right.
And it was like, first off, a Black Shadow, a Rapide, any kind of Vincent, they're rideable machines.
Sure.
You can actually use them. They need to be maintained and serviced. And
since there's no frame, my dad used to have one. I think one of the deals is you got to make sure they're kind of all screwed together right, since the motor is the stressed member.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You need to kind of know what you're doing. The bike needs to be ready, but if it's ready, you can, you can get on a rip. This technology is 30 years ahead of BMW, Ducati, where everything else was in the 50s.
Yeah.
And then this one, 54 years owned, well-maintained by the owner, and then, of course, superbly prepped for sale by the shop that sold it. And with that 5-speed,
I mean, so I'm cool, like, dude,
that might be,
I know.
And these are foot shift bikes, mind you. I mean, you're not slamming gears on a non-synchro hand shift.
Yep.
I mean, it's like, you can really move this thing. With the 5-speed, I'm kind of like,
I know. My dad, he was always talking about all the, you know, there's center stands and there's all these things you're supposed to do to Vincent.
Vincent's right? Have three different stands on them. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, and my three dad, and there's like very, you know, it's like any kind of community that coalesces around an old car or around an old bike. There's like certain fixes you're supposed to do to them, right? Like,
sure.
Right. There's like three or four things you do to all of them. And one of them has to do with a stand. You'll have to tell me which. I think it's a center stand is what you're supposed to get.
I've never owned one, so I couldn't tell you. But if I see one come across, I'll be sure to let you know.
My dad would be upset that I can't remember it is exactly what all that was. Well, Tyler, this was an absolute joy. We'll obviously have you back. I mean, we could do this forever. Is anything you want to end with, man?
Honestly, the fact that we're talking about bikes, the fact that you're including a lot of bike mentions in the podcast, which, by the way, has been fantastic. I don't know if I've said that. Yet I know I work here, but I also really enjoy listening to your podcast.
Oh man, that's too kind.
And that would be kind of, I mean, I feel like we're at a really good place where,
how many bike listings now? Do you have that number off the top of your head? How many have we done?
We just crossed like 6,200.
Amazing.
That's amazing. And we've done,
how many did we do just last year?
Yeah. Thousands, the funny thing is, if you look back just on a rolling 1 year, we're at like 2,200.
That we did in 2023?
No, that we did just going back to like last March.
Oh my gosh. Oh, okay.
So if you just go rolling, I mean, it's the numbers. I mean, they're
hundreds every month.
Yeah, for sure. And fantastic bikes. I mean, so really, you know, like
full gamut. That's one of the things I like about it. It's everything from these mini bikes that we were talking about all the way up to these, you know, 100K plus Vincents and Indian 4s and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think my parting shot would just be, thanks to the team of folks who worked to put us on the map when it comes to motorcycles. and who are kind of, you know, busting hump every day to make sure that these folks have great experiences. I mean, the biggest thing is that we know what we're talking about, right?
Yep.
And you really can't successfully, I don't think, list motorcycles if you really don't know what you're looking at.
Totally.
So the people that are on the moto team that are actually working in curation, that are working in the customer service department, that are working on live auctions and helping sellers out during a live auction process, and every step along the way, they all know what they're talking about.
Totally.
And it's hard to see that through the internet. So it's a little hard to kind of get that across, but the results have just been fantastic. So I'm so proud of everybody on the team, what they've accomplished, and the fire that they approach this with. I mean, I love that these guys still have this chip on their shoulder.
I love it too, man. I mean, shout out to them.
And we have some women on the team too. I shouldn't say guys.
That's right.
We have some new additions who are doing a fantastic job.
Yep.
Everyone's just doing a really wonderful job. And I love seeing that. And I'm proud to be a part of it.
I mean, we're so lucky to have all those folks, and we're so lucky to have you, man. Thanks for all you do. It's great to see you. And I can't wait to do this again. Thanks,
Tyler. Let's do it again. See ya.
Absolutely. All right. Cheers, buddy. Thank you, everybody.